Okay, thanks everyone. So in this session, we're going to talk to you about common reporting practice in relation to the primary financial statements. So we're going to hear first from Anoush, and we're also going to hear from, so firstly AP2 from Anoush, and then AP2A from Vivek and Rita. So I'll hand over to Anoush.
Good morning, everyone. I will present Agenda Paper 2, which discusses how we have approached research and extension analysis since our June ITCG meeting last year. So last April, we started research and extension analysis that are created by foreign private issuers. During our ITCG meeting in June, ITCG members agreed that this research is important and of high priority. Additionally, members also agreed with the research methodologies we propose to use for our research on extensions. To give you a recap, we use three research methodologies for our research on extension. They are bottom-up approach, where we cluster extensions line items into categories. The second one is top-down approach, where we review fundamental relationships and extension access. And finally, we also focus on feedback from external stakeholders. So the research project has been divided into two phases, and the objective of today's meeting is to provide our findings and proposals from phase one. Phase one consists of findings and proposals from top-down approach and feedback from external stakeholders, which Rita and Vivek will present shortly. Phase two consists of bottom-up approach and remainder feedback from external stakeholders. We plan to discuss these phase findings and proposals in our next ITCG meeting. Slide 5 presents project timeline, which shows what the staff have done to date and what they plan to carry out in 2020 to first quarter of 2021. Members can refer to Appendix A to examine criteria that we have used to identify common reporting practice, and Appendix B to view feedbacks that we have received from external stakeholders. So the question is, do ITCG members have any comments or questions on our research methodology used? Thank you.
And maybe just pointing out that in the appendix before, when we identified common reporting practice, we always did it on a sample of companies engaged in a particular industry or on the total sample of companies. In fact, what we found in practice when we looked at extensions created for foreign private issuers is that, in fact, what we did not look at is a sample of companies that are engaged in a particular transaction. For instance, if a company has issued preference stock, on our prior common reporting practice, we would not never have added a common practice line item for preference stock, because in fact the sample we selected included maybe only 10 companies that had preference stock. Therefore, we came never to come to our frequency criteria. So now we have a little bit improved our sample selection and say, look, if we see extension line items in a particular area which seem to be very frequent, let's have a look and see if that extension items relate to a particular transaction, and then find companies that are engaged in this particular transaction. And with the new data analysis tools that is on our disposal, we can do that much simpler. And I think that's the only refinement we have made compared to what we discussed in June.
Ashok. So, Anoush, I have two questions. Question one, is this an ad hoc project? You're doing this phase one and phase two, or is it like a part of, you know, the whole process forever?
I'm not sure if I fully understand, Ashok, but what we're really saying, we say our project is to do a review of the extensions created for the primary financial statement with the aim to come to one proposed taxonomy update, really. Mm-hmm. Because when we started looking at it, we understand very much what an investor faces now, because there were quite a few extensions in different areas. So we just have faced up the different type of analysis to give some structure to the way we approach our research.
So, you know, just going things again. So Right now, IFRS taxonomy, the highest user is obviously SEC filers. So much, you know, the data. And from next year, we will have, you know, the ISMA filing. More data will come, and it requires a lot of time and resources, which I appreciate. And the question is really, my second question is about the maturity model. So, for example, if you're doing all, according to this timeline, if you're doing all this analysis, and then you're proposing additions, deletions, deprecation, or whatever you want to call it, in quarter one of 2021. So that's where my question is, that is this like a March next year, March every year, one would see the new taxonomy following all the research?
What our plan is to do is to look at where we think there are potential improvements to the taxonomy. So that's the whole purpose of the common reporting practice. So what we'll be doing is we'll be looking at you know, areas where we identify problems, and if there are problems that we identify, then we'll look to update the taxonomy. That's not to say we're necessarily going to be doing an update to the taxonomy every single year, because we realise that has cost implications for the people, the preparers who are putting together the taxonomy. But wherever we do identify potential improvements, and if we think the benefits of those improvements will outweigh the cost of potential need to re-tag information, then we will go ahead and we'll propose those improvements. And of course, we do put any changes out for consultation, and so if there are situations where you think actually the benefit of this, you know, it isn't such that we would go ahead with it, then, you know, we'll take that feedback and we'll listen to it. Does that answer your question?
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Agenda paper 2A.
Okay. Yes, we'll pass to paper 2A. Vivek, please.
Good morning, everyone. I'll take you through the agenda paper 2A, which is about the review of fundamental calculation relationships in the primary financial statements. Today, our objective is to discuss our analysis and findings for these two calculation relationships. I'll start with a section on the statement of cash flows, which is in continuation of June 2019 ITCG meeting, and Rita will take you through the section on gross profit. Our review shows that the calculation relationship generally works well in practice. However, we noticed that there are certain exceptions, and the common exception was an incorrect use of an element. On slide 5, on the left-hand side, we can see the presentation structure as per the IFRS taxonomy. And on the right, it's the structure that is commonly reported by the companies. Here we observed that around 12% of the companies use the incorrect element, net increase decrease in cash and cash equivalent, to tag the amount of 15, which is the increase decrease before the exchange rate differences. We think the possible reason for this incorrect use is that some preparers mainly rely on the label name to match the label used in their financial statements. And in this case, element label does not precisely define that it is after the effect of exchange rate changes. Therefore, we propose to change the label of this element to include the words after the effect of exchange rate changes to make its accounting meaning clearer. Next slide discusses about our taxonomy policy. A taxonomy policy is to normally match the standard label of the element with the wordings used in the IFRS standards or its accompanying materials. Although the proposed change will be an exception to this policy, we think this exception is justified to make the accounting meaning clear. We also considered changing the documentation label only without changing the label, but rejected that option because of these reasons, that it is not widely used. To be consistent, we also reviewed the whole taxonomy to see if there are more elements where label does not clearly identify the disclosure, if it is before or after the effect of exchange rate changes, but that review did not highlight any such elements. So here is the question to the members. Do you agree with our proposals?
This is my favorite topic. So I think the definition is absolutely, you know, the vital. So cash flow statement, very good one you picked up. I mean, if you look at the first of all, look at the filer point of view. All the customers I deal with, they hardly even they see the taxonomy itself, how it's been structured. So, for example, if you look at the cash flow statement, very nicely structured, and the net, the word net tells you that everything after adjustment and everything. Yet they're using totally wrong, the tag as you just highlighted. So the definition within that particular things, if you really look at the definitions, it's the same, does not tell you after, the financial, after the effect of exchange and so on and so forth. Same way, part of your second question is also, if you look at the profit and loss account, income statement, you have, if you look at the structure, very nicely structured, per taxonomy, profit and loss before tax, per tax, profit and loss from continuing operations, profit and loss from discontinuing operation, and finally profit and loss. But if you look at the definition, especially profit and loss on continuing operations and discontinuing operations, there is nothing is tell you whether it's after tax, before tax, and so on and so forth. So in my opinion, I think if we just provide some key phrases in definition, that would probably prevent so many, the issue which you just highlighted.
Okay.
And is that in the documentation label or in the standard label you're referring to, or in both?
In both.
Okay.
This is an only statement of profit and loss, or do you see across the taxonomy?
No, that's only one thing I found in profit and loss. So, for example, the last one is quite interesting, the definition. The final figure of profit and loss. It says total income less expenses from continuing and discontinuing operations, excluding components of other comprehensive income. So doesn't say anything at all. Definition itself is pretty good, but when you, the especially the filer, and that's the thing I have issue, because they hardly see the taxonomy, how it's been structured, and they just see, and the definition, which is one of the criteria they see, the tag is correct or incorrect. So if we put some keyword in the definition, that would be really helpful. That's my suggestions.
Just one question. Do you think the filers use the documentation labels quite frequently? We can rely on that, we can add additional guidance through the documentation label to the elements.
In my experience, the tag itself, obviously, when we tag, obviously, when we use, the standard, the IFRS tag, definition will appear. But people normally don't see the relationship between this, how it's been structured and what the definition. They see the definition and they see some keyword is missing, so say, no, that tag is not correct. And they will ask us to extend the tag or change the different tag, which is really, this is the quite interesting example just you highlighted about the cash flow statement.
Okay.
I would say, the provide keyword within the definition, and I think it will solve a lot of problems.
Peter.
To me, this it seems maybe more of a underlying accounting problem than something to do with taxonomies, because I would have thought that someone who says my change in cash is X, when actually that isn't your change in cash, is just wrong, to put it bluntly. And I wondered whether introducing multiple tags before and after FX might actually sort of muddy the waters somewhat, and if anything, suggest that you're trying to accommodate people who are presenting a number that is actually incorrect. That was the kind of the risk, as I saw it, of introducing these multiple tags. It seemed more of an underlying accounting reporting problem.
Christine?
As it relates to the SEC environment, didn't the SEC recently require that filers look at the references?
Well, the EFM has a precedence order of selecting elements, and the first is reference.
The references. So
it also includes documentation
and the rest of it.
Standard label, data type.
Right.
So, I mean, it raises the question of just general practice of filers. If they are simply just looking at the label itself and not looking at all of the presentation and calculation type relationships and also the references, then that could be more of a push. I don't know what else you can do on your side to enforce, you know, to have filers look at the references to start with and also look at the taxonomy as a whole.
Okay. And we have a guide, a preparer's guide, where we go through exactly the same kind of thing to understand what you need to tag. You need to look at this and this and this and this, not just at the label. It's not it's not an exercise of label matching.
Right,
it's an exercise of matching accounting meaning. And that message seems to continue to get lost.
Really. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it seems, I mean, the taxonomy could not be clearer in terms of the presentation, the calculation, what the elements mean, whether it's before or net of the exchange rate effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm I'm not familiar with the particular, you know, paragraph 45, but I'm assuming that clearly articulates this is, you know, net of the exchange rate, and the reference to the element that says before exchange rate will point to the IFRS, you know, relevant paragraph to say this is before the exchange rate. And as such, if they're complying with the SEC kind of implementation, they should be looking at the references as the first thing before looking at anything else, right?
I mean, this is to Peter's point, but I'm not sure if we have any response, you know, that...
It's... When we looked at many of the extensions, we were super surprised in some cases how companies had tagged. And when I looked at some of the examples, it really occurred to me that they're doing a label matching exercise and it's not an accounting meaning matching exercise. Now, we have provided that in guides, it may be in the filing rules, but the practice is that probably over time it may get better. Maybe with some audit assurance in Europe, I think it definitely would get better because then the accountants would become more involved. But if we see that we can do simple things within the taxonomy to address something that's really commonly wrongly done, then why not? Look, if we say, look, 12% of the companies have a cash flow statement that do not match because they use the wrong element, if I, as a user, would extract the data and I have to look to 12% of the companies to see what's going on, I would not do it. So therefore, if you really take into account practical considerations and it's something that we can do relatively simple to the taxonomy, our view has like, why not? That's what we came to in the end. And maybe, like I said, with more accounting assurance, these problems will diminish over time.
I think just responding to Peter's point in particular about whether this could potentially muddy the waters, I think the problem that we have is that when you look at this in a paper-based format, you don't have the problem because it's pretty obvious what's going on. You can see it really easily. I think the problem arises when you actually translate that into the electronic format, that you cannot get that sort of clarity. And by introducing these, we're hoping that we would actually introduce more clarity into what is there in terms of the electronic numbers, which obviously are not in the context of a whole cash flow statement, for example.
Might you even hope that by having the choice of two tags, that actually this might serve as a prompter for the paper-based version for preparers to think again about this?
Mm-hmm. It may do. Well, I think that might be
ambitious. Maybe, yeah.
Okay.
I had a question, but actually this last comment's before this.
Thank you. Tadio.
Why I like the idea that it's much more educational issue than the need to change the label. And in this case, especially, it's easy to detect because if I have the 15 line, I should have the 17 one, not the opposite way. And then I think that working with educational, and I know that I think the SEC used to send some letters or recommendations to when they identify some of mistakes, and then if we start doing this type of process, what are the common pitfalls and etc. I think that may come with more effect than changing the labels, but it's up to the group, of course.
Okay. John, want to comment at this point?
So we looked at this slightly more broadly, and just using SEC IFRS disclosures tried to construct a dozen very simple metrics and falling into the same issues. There are lots of mistakes in these initial disclosures with the SEC, and I think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with clarifying labels, nothing wrong with clarifying definitions, but I think we should also understand that this is something that is symptomatic of all new environments. So in the first year or two of these kinds of disclosures, with especially a more complex environment, history shows that the quality of the choices tend to be poor. We would hope that those will get improved through audit, through anchoring in the ESEF context, which hopefully will flow through to the at least the foreign private issuers that are EU based. But thirdly, that with the increased focus by the audit profession on these materials within Europe, that will actually alter some of the ways that the software works, and the way the software vendors are thinking about this process, because it's very clear that there's lots of label matching going on when you look at some of the choices that are occurring. That's not the right way to produce your software, and people will improve that over time because the market will force that out. Is I guess another perspective to think through.
Yeah, I think you can change now, because if this one is much more common reporting, but I think that after we transfer to the inline XBRF, the taxonomy, I mean, how can I say that? Taxonomy or the presentation is not always be the same as the paper based the reporting. So because inline XBR, company can choose any tags on any, they can put any tags on the inlines. Before, the taxonomy, the presentation taxonomy is never different from that original financial statements. So that the now it's quite difficult to expect the company using as same as the standard IFRS taxonomy presentation, as same as IFRS taxonomy presentations. Technically, company can choose any type of that one. And in case of Japanese ADNET taxonomy, ADNET filings, company have to extending to the calculation link rules as same as the extension tags, because company can easy to switching the location. In that case, calculation relationship also changes. So that the filing, this is quite difficult issues, I think, that because I thought that the IFA taxonomy is not expecting to the company using the same as all the taxonomy presentations. So maybe this one you have to find another way.
Correct. The IFRS taxonomy calculation, because the IFRS is principle based, mm-hmm. So the IFRS taxonomy does it not prescribe a fixed structure. Mm-hmm. Therefore, any calculation that exists in the taxonomy is more what we said for navigational purposes, to see how items are presented rather than how they should in the taxonomy, rather than how they should be presented in their own financial reports.
Yeah, that's also.
It just reflects what the IFRS standards are.
Flexibility of IFR is also one of the issues. Not only that, also the inline XBR allow company more flexibility now. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Tom. I just want to reflect on actually one of the points that's sort of been alluded to by some of the things that Rachel has said, and also John Turner and recently Chi, around the sort of the view of the sort of systematic problems when tagging first comes into force, or that actually an end user is perhaps not of the sort of IT vein, may not have the same clear view of the tagging as they do of the financial statements. I go back to what Christine was saying earlier, which is that the taxonomy is actually incredibly clear. But I do recognise, and especially a lot of the outputs that we see, is that not all of the filers have the same capability of software to be able to actually have a transparent view, as Chi says, of the fact that the taxonomy presents those concepts and those facts and in a different light. And only by actually being able to actually even sometimes do that site reconciliation, does it then look like an obvious mistake? And are we pinning the... it's right to say that we shouldn't be... the initial tagging effort shouldn't be against the label. There's also a second failure,
which is the company's own review of that tagging. The control failed as well, and that's probably through limitation of software and support.
Well, to be fair, slightly to the software vendors, it's also a failure of education and understanding within the preparer community, and in particular within audit committees, to understand that this is their responsibility. And that is already true in the case of the United States, but it has been, it's softly, softly.
Harry, do you want to come in now?
No, I just hold my card up for the fun of it. No, I'm okay with the change, but it does feel more like we're doing education through a taxonomy change, because the standard is very clear what you're supposed to do. It's not difficult to grasp what you should do, shouldn't do, or required to do, depending on how you look at it. And companies, my guess is, looking at slide 5, do things for, convenience, whatever. They got to know labeling it this way is not quite correct. But on the other hand, measuring the effect of exchange rate changes on cash, there's a lot of element of art in there. There's multiple ways you can do this, depending on the precision of your numbers and how precisely you want to track individual days. So I'm okay with actually the common practice in it, and I don't disagree with the change. I'm really challenging, is it this really just doing education through a taxonomy change? Because if you read slide 7, your first line is before the effective exchange rate changes. The next line is exchange rate changes. The last one is a subtraction by definition. It's after exchange rate changes. Do we need to say it? And again, it's okay to do, but this is not the most important number in most financial statements. I remember when these things first came out 30 years ago, there was debates, should that be up, should exchange rate changes be up someplace, the operations numbers, but somehow people got there. So just some perspectives. What I think sort of feels more like you're doing education through the taxonomy than we are making an adjustment that truly is needed.
Mm-hmm. Anna?
I'll be very brief. I'm very supportive of this change, not because I agree with all the comments that this is also a matter that rely on education, and we need to, the software needs to improve, and the regulators need to improve, and the auditors will get involved. But everyone is here to do one bit, their part, and the role of the IFRS taxonomy is to make sure that the labels are as clear as possible, and this change makes the label clearer, and I am very supportive of trying, and everyone trying to do their best with what the role can be, and in this case, the support, the example addresses an issue that's been identified, and yes, label matching is happening, will continue to happen until experience and review from users and from regulators becomes more more prominent. So, continue. Good job. Thank you for doing this very thorough work and review of FPIs. I think it's a good way to proceed. Yeah.
Christine.
So really quickly, I echo everything that Anna said. I think one of the other things, too, to get filers to pay a lot more attention, because I think education, you can educate. I know the FASB has been doing that for a long time with the implementation guides and so forth. But one thing that I found personally very effective is XBRL US posts the data quality committee errors on their website. Mm-hmm. And when I start pointing that to the external reporting folks and say, hey, you guys have 14 errors, I hear dead silence on the other end of the phone. And then immediately it's like, how can we get rid of it? Can we do something? What can we do? So I think if XBRL International, there's some way that you can do something similar to what XBRL US is doing, I think that will grab the attention of the filers themselves, and they will pay very close attention to what tags they're selecting, and perhaps they might actually even look at the taxonomy itself and try to select the correct tags.
We ask for miracles, come on.
Yeah. But I think I want to echo that. I think that's actually more important, this change is that you signal we're watching these little things, and we care about them, and we care about alignment or matching, you know, when it's otherwise required or logical to do so. I think that's the more important message out of there than just the, you know, a couple of words in it. And I think that would be the message you want to get out. Now, of course, the risk would be, well, if that's all you found, I guess everything else is fine. Now, there's probably a lot of these things if we scrub the accounts from top to bottom. But this is, we sort of work these 1 year at a time. You got the common practice reviews. We work them as they find them. But the point is, we care about little things like that. That's the real message we want to get out.
Yeah, and sort of coming back to your point, John, you know, I found, and you probably know some anecdotal evidence, like when we start talking to folks at the board level and audit committees, once they realize that their XBRL filing exposes them to risk because they're selecting the wrong tags, it trickles down, and you have everyone in the organization stepping in line. And so that's what we found very effective. And it's just all we're doing is just pointing them to this, you know, XBRL US's website and say, hey, this is how you look to the public. Moose.
Yeah, so I think I agree with all of that. I just want to add, though, that I'm supportive of making these modifications to the definitions to make them more precise. And you know, maybe it's some education, but part of the issue here is that when filers are having to tag their financial statements, they don't devote the amount of time to it that we do, and they're going through this pretty quickly. And if they find something that they think fits, they're going to jump on it and move ahead. And the tools that they're working with frequently don't put some of this in context. A lot of the taxonomy viewing tools will just give you a laundry list of elements that are potential candidates. And you might have the definition with it, but you may have nothing else. You may not have context. You may not have the structure. You may not have any of that. So the better the definition is, the less likely they are to make an error of this sort. So being precise as you can be with the definition is useful. And anytime we run in this kind of situation, we would not hesitate to make that sort of change.
Thank you. Dick.
Yeah, I also like to make a comment, maybe more from the filer's perspective. So first of all, I think this FPI IFRS shouldn't be overestimated because, I mean, the fact that you had to do a detailed tagging for the first time together with your main statements was a huge pressure on the filers, and this situation is completely different that you now see on the ESMA side. So I think this was really predictable that we will see in the market a lot of errors because the filers, they didn't have the time to prepare this. Even up to October, it was discussed that it will be postponed. You know, because IAS 39 was changed by IFRS 9, so this was a big discussion in the industry. Does it really make sense now in that situation to start with detailed tagging if the whole standard for one industry will change completely? And this, as we all know, was not decided. So I think it's simply when we talk to our peers, it's of course education, it's experience, and over time those errors should disappear. As they have now more the time. And I think this should also, in what way, also set, yeah, because then this gives really the true picture of this, what we see now as in the data and all these errors. Yeah. And maybe we should more focus not on errors, but on conceptual differences where we see, because I think errors will disappear over time. That's also what you can see if you look and the SEC filings last 8 years, and you look at the errors, the number of errors, what's the extension rate, the average, it goes down.
But it's still way too high.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, sure.
Okay, Vivek, anything for you to finish up? Okay, we go to Rita. Oh, excuse me, Rita. Binla, did you want to add anything?
Hi. I just would like to express that we support the inclusion of additional guidance on a clearer label for for the element. But I just have one point I would like to add regarding the calculation link base. I think using your example, if the user of the taxonomy refers to the calculation link base, it's probably quite clear that the element should be after foreign exchange effect. So I wonder if in your guidance, I mean the taxonomy guidance or the explanation to the element, if you can have a way to remind the user to refer to calculation link base, it probably will be helpful.
Yeah. And we do that to some extent in our preparer's guide, Binla, where we say, okay, calculation can also be given help, but calculations, unfortunately, in taxonomy don't always give that help. And we qualify that a little bit in the preparer's guide. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks, Binla. Is there anyone else online? Okay. Rita, would you like to continue?
Sure. Thank you. Another fundamental relationship is really gross profit. And now we have received stakeholder feedback when saying that, in fact, when you use the average taxonomy elements revenue and cost of sales, when you apply calculations to these two elements, it does not equal to the value of gross profit. And this particular stakeholder said that really does not give me much trust in using this data. So what the IFRS taxonomy team did, we did repeated this analysis for all the foreign private issues for the 2017 filings, because when we did this analysis only, we had a complete set of 2017 filings. Now, quickly, we could exclude some companies that are out of scope because they either give a breakdown by nature or they are engaged in financing activities. However, our analysis also showed that, in fact, the relationship does not work for 104 companies, this simple relationship does not work for 104 companies, which is really 22% of all foreign private issues, which was quite significant. So what we did, we really said, okay, now for each, because gross profit is such an important measure for investors, we looked at the reasons for this, why this relationship did not fit, and we tried to categorize all these reasons in main patterns. Then when we did that, then we say, okay, now let's see, do we find a really common pattern, and can we do something for that common pattern? And whilst we're doing this analysis, we also looked at the notes, and then we saw some issues in the notes as well regarding the attribution of items by nature to cost of sales. So in this presentation, I'm going to touch on these three topics. So the main reasons why why it did not work is tagging errors. And some of these tagging errors, again, are very confusing because you really don't understand where they're coming from. Like a company reports total operating expenses and provides a tax with the cost of goods sold tax. So it's when we looked at the tagging errors, we could not understand why that occurred, therefore, we really could not put any guidance or could do anything for it. Then we had other things, like which I've mentioned here in the slide, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to talk into detail, but there were other reasons why, in fact, this calculation would not work, and in fact, there is nothing wrong with it. Like, for instance, instead of using the average taxonomy element revenue, a company was engaged in a particular activity and they would have said revenue from sale of gold. And we have an average taxonomy element for revenue from sale of gold. So, in fact, this user would have to use all these elements in the calculation of gross profit. However, we discovered that we had quite a few errors which really can relate to the different presentation patterns for cost of sales. And I want to focus on that. So what we discovered is really that the relationship does not work or may not always work when a company presents a cost of sales that excludes a specific expense that the company has attributed to this cost of sales. And on this slide, I just provided an example, and it's quite typical for extractive companies. So what this company has done, on the primary financial statement that broke down the cost of sales in two major components, really a cost of sales excluding depreciation and then the depreciation included within cost of sales. Now, this will not work when, not work well for a user when a company tags these two elements in orange with extension line items, because based on the current tagging, there are extension line items. In fact, you need to manually review these extension line items to see what they really mean. And also what we found is that there are quite a few companies that really use then the IFRS taxonomy element cost of sales to tag the cost of sales excluding depreciation. And then tag depreciation with depreciation, which was not the whole depreciation as well. However, this relationship will work for some companies, because some companies also explicitly reported on their primary financial statement a cost of sales and then indented the disaggregation. So this is a problem that we discovered. So then we looked at it, okay, can we do anything about this within the IFRS taxonomy? So we looked, should we provide additional common reporting practice or can we provide additional guidance? So what we did, we looked at all these specific expenses that could be excluded from cost of sales. But in fact, in practice, there were different type of expenses and there was no commonality. Like, for instance, one thing that was very common is to say to exclude depreciation and amortization from cost of sales, but it was only 5 to 10% of the companies did. And I've given here some additional examples. So based on our existing criteria for common reporting practice, we could not justify creating additional elements. And even if we did it, for instance, cost of sales, including depreciation, amortization, we still had the problem for all these other companies which exclude another specific expense. Then we thought about, shall we do something completely out of the box? Like, should we include in the IFRS taxonomy an element which is more like a dummy element, an anchor element? That you could say, in the taxonomy, I'm saying something, cost of sales excluding expenses separately presented. Yeah. But when we looked at it, we thought, okay, by doing that, it may even add more confusing, because this element would have no defined accounting meaning. We could not make any references to the IFRS standards. Yeah. And it would also be a complete new feature, not only within the IFRS taxonomy, but also within other taxonomies in the world. So we really, if we were to go there, we would prefer to have a broader discussion with other taxonomy standard setters on it. Also, then we consider that, in fact, if we had anchoring, or if we had either through the mechanism proposed by ESMA or through the mechanism that XBRL International is looking at through calculations, that, in fact, a filer could say, okay, I have not explicitly reported cost sales. I use extensions. I'm going to link them in one way or another to say, declare to an electronic user that is cost of sales. So having considered all of this, we said, okay, it exists. Unfortunately, we can do little about it at the moment. So it's a situation where, in fact, a user, either through calculations, may want to derive something, or through technology, looking at the labels, you can give some meaning to the extension, but we cannot resolve this problem within the IFRS taxonomy. However, we also, like I mentioned already, we also noticed that there are quite a significant proportion of companies who say, okay, I'm using the IFRS taxonomy element cost of sales to tag the cost of sales excluding depreciation and amortization or any other expense. Now, that would result in practice not only that calculations do not work anymore, but if a company did not report explicitly gross profit, an investor would derive a wrong value for gross profit, and there is no warning or that alerts this investor that they are using the wrong gross profit. So again, it's a similar kind of approach that we have done for the labels. It's a question, should we include additional guidance within the taxonomy? Now, I've heard all the arguments from, okay, we can educate more. We could even maybe put a document on our website where we provide common tagging errors. But we have come to the conclusion that because it's such an important element, it would not we would add an implementation label. And as you remember, so we are not going to put it in the standard label. We are not going to put it in the documentation labels because they have reference to the IFRS standards. We're really going to use the existing guidance label within the taxonomy to state to people that they really should not use this element when they have a cost of sale, excluding a specific expense. And also we give the most common example that we see in practice. So my question to you is, and I think, do you agree with the staff proposal to add a new guidance label? And I assume that probably we'll get similar kind of answers, but also we could not see of any mechanism to resolve that problem of saying, okay, how can we tag best a cost of sales or an item excluding something? Do you know of any mechanism we are not aware of that you can use within a taxonomy to tag that? So that are my two questions to you.
Okay, Chief.
Yeah, I really agree about that. Because we have seen a lot of similar cases, not only cost of sales. Example that the intangible assets also have similar issues. But I think that it's quite difficult to solve this issue only about the taxonomy guidelines. I want people to think about, is this really useful, the financial statements? So I think that we have discussed about this issue for long, and I felt that somehow the preparer thinking about the name of the accounting items is not so much strictly connecting with definitions. So easy to name on accounting items. Example, this is if we stick in the definition, it is excluding something, not cost of sales anymore, but company using the name so easily. So that I think this issue is from the original financial statement issue. The wording is not so clear as accounting item levels before tagging on this financial statement. So if you can discuss more about the original issues as financial statement issues.
I think in this particular case, if you are an extractive company, for instance, and we found it very common for extractive companies, one of their major component costs of their cost of sales is, for instance, depreciation and depletion cost. So I can understand why it is relevant for such companies to provide a disaggregation on their primary financial statement. So I would say, look, it's not necessarily an accounting issue. It's really something, is there a way that we in an electronic world can represent that so that it becomes easy consumable? That is really the question. I think anchoring goes away, maybe the new calculations where you can link something to an unreported total probably will help as well. But again, I put it to you to say, is there anything else that I did not consider that we should have considered? And
I totally agree with the proposals. It's a great, just following earlier on, providing the clear definition and clear label. And I'm very glad that you not venture on this anchoring thing. Anchoring is not, it should not be. It really makes entire XBRL unnecessarily complicated. And I take you thing, if I wanted to use extended label or custom label, or custom tag, one thing would really help is provide, the definition of that, my custom, the tag, just like, the standard tag. Why am I using this custom tag? Provide succinctly, what is underlying accounting transaction is, rather than anchoring thing. So I wholeheartedly support, what you're proposing. Clear definition, some keyword, and I think it will do the work, rather than complicating the whole simple exercise unnecessarily. Anchoring is one of the things which I never got around to this thing, understanding it makes everything complicated unnecessarily. Costly too, and modeling too.
Thank you, Ashok. So I think the subject of anchoring, we take that to a future meeting, I think, because otherwise we'll go in long discussions now.
So I was going to say that, firstly, I support the use of the additional guidance labels. It's worth mentioning, though, that Earlier we talked about the fact that software is exposing the ordinary labels, often the references and the documentation labels. We may find also there's another software ask in terms of, is it actually going to provide those guidance labels to ultimate end users? Does software even know that they exist? Again, it's something that's worthwhile warranted doing, but it's actually going to be transparent to the end user. So I do agree with that. You asked a specific question, though, Rita, which was, is there a mechanism for which, through other taxonomies, you can tag a fact excluding elements? And it's worth mentioning that the UK taxonomy framework uses a, you might call it, a proprietary mechanism called an analysis dimension. Mm-hmm. Analytical dimension. It's a typed. It's a typed dimension, and that allows you to take something and then break it down further. That supports their sort of non-taxonomy extension mandate in the UK as well. But it also nicely kind of solves this problem. Of course, it doesn't work very nicely with the use of the current calculation database.
That's the one we have to consider as well, because calculations are required by many of our regulators.
Mm-hmm. We had the same issue in the GAP taxonomy, and we had conversations with our TAG counterpart advisory group this past year. And what we were finding, and some of this, if you're looking at the foreign private issuers, may be driven by some of the SEC requirements that if a line item is more than a certain percentage of the total, it has to be split out. So what happens is you get varying line items being broken out from some of these totals. And, you know, we brought it to our group to say, do we create the more common, you know, excluding type thing? And we do have one excluding depreciation, because that is fairly common, but that was existing. But there, we saw some others. And the conversation there basically came down to that really that remainder that's not split out is an aggregation of immaterial items, and that they should use the other element. So we have cost of sales other.
All right.
So that they would use that, and then whatever specific line items would be split out. So that's kind of where we ended up. Might be a slightly different place, but that's kind of.
Because we don't provide that disaggregation. So it's a good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we provided an FAQ on our website that scenario to use the other elements.
Suzanne. I just wondered, and you know, both Kyle and Donna touched on it, is sort of if there is a worthwhile discussion in this group in the future that deals with, you know, the all but or the, you know, sort of issues that might show up, and sort of if there's a, like a bigger conversation for us to have that's about those things that brings to bear different solutions that people have come up with or different, you know, we spent, you know, a while, a good couple of years talking to investors and analysts, and the all but issue and the need to consume that and the interest in it, and that sometimes it is the thing that's excluded is material, if it's depreciation and, you know, in your example. And so maybe just a broader discussion on that issue alone might be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just a reflection that a few of these past discussions have been around, I would call it, for lack of a better description, interpretations of the standards in the context of either the labels or the documentation or references or calculations necessary. So perhaps a bit of a radical thought, but aren't we really talking about something like IFRIC for taxonomies or for taxonomy parts? I don't want to propose that we create IFRIC for taxonomy parts, but effectively these discussions are so intertwined that we are, just like the earlier discussion where Peter commented that there is actually a very accounting nature of the former rather than the technological one. So it basically maybe lends itself to an idea of either incorporating such guidance in the as IFRIC, or maybe carving out some IFRIC type of or area for interpretations related to the taxonomy. Just a thought.
Thank you.
So earlier, I think it was mentioned that when looking at MPMs, it would be useful if there was a way of indicating which IFRS measure they were most closely aligned with. And I wonder whether whatever mechanism is arrived at for that purpose could in some way also be used here as well to say that, okay, this is an element of cost of sales, but you have that extra piece of the puzzle that says the IFRS item that it's most closely linked to is cost of sales, for example. I wondered if there's some overlap there.
That is the anchoring and the new calculation spec 2. That's where that would be considered. That's why, like, calculation spec 2, my understanding is, like, even the company does not explicitly report cost of sales. I could say, okay, I've created here two extension line items, and I create a calculation from these two extension items to the IFRS taxonomy element cost of sales, even if that item is not explicitly reported. And in anchoring, we have also a similar mechanism, really. Of course, there's an interesting question, like the depreciation included in cost of sales. Should that be anchored to cost of sales or depreciation? So it's not fully solved either. Nick?
Yeah, just from a practical point of view, I must admit, I've kind of run into this problem with not necessarily directly using SBR data, but just using data from data aggregators. And it's extremely frustrating that you end up with a very different cost of goods sold number, and hence you derive a different gross profit number, which doesn't necessarily mean anything. And just want to check, are the errors we're picking up all related to the face of the P&L? Or they are? So does this disappear? And at the heart of the problem seems to be an accounting issue that today we're mixing function and nature.
Yeah.
And actually, once, you know, if we take our proposals for PFS and say it's either by function or by nature, that may help resolve this issue.
Yeah, to some extent, because when we saw that there are two scenarios, really, and I didn't put them all in, but there are two scenarios where you saw this kind of pattern. Mm. So there was a pattern which I have shown here where there was a full disaggregation of cost of sales, like typical for extractive industries, and there were companies that reported cost of which mixed this function and nature. And there you'd say, okay, they labeled it cost of sales, and later on they put something as depreciation. And in fact, we as staff could not even say, is that now a true mixture? Because really, is this depreciation, all the depreciation allocated outside of cost of sales? So you really couldn't understand. And therefore, we did not consider that example, because we would have to talk to each individual prepared to say, okay, did you really use this stack wrongly or not really? But that issue would go away under the new proposals for the primary financial statement. But the issue where you provide a disaggregation, where you provide two or more components without explicitly reporting cost of sales, will not go away.
Yeah.
Okay. I am aware of the timing, because we still need some timing for Vivek as well to go to his slide. So I really want to go very quickly on it, because it's in fact a similar problem that we had this morning when we talked about the use of the location access. So what we discovered is that it's common reporting practice for companies to provide in their notes an expense by nature and allocate that to a particular functional line item. So we are in the scenario, companies present a functional profit and loss account, provide some additional expenses by nature in the notes, and they allocate that to a profit and loss account. That could be a full disaggregation, that could be just one item expense by nature, which is allocated to one or multiple functional line items. So I've just given here two examples. So what we saw in practice, again, because that model is not envisaged within the taxonomy, we saw in practice that companies tag this in multiple ways. They used extension line items, they used the location access, they used an expense by nature access. So, again, in practice, we saw, look, inconsistent. There's not a good way to do it, but the fact that it is not good and inconsistent is worse than having something that is consistently not so good. So having done that, we have said, okay, we will include within the, we are proposing to include in the IFRS taxonomy a table where we will use this location access again for this type of disclosures. Now, I think the arguments where you sent this morning, look, okay, location access is not the best. That's still completely true. But it's better than having, in practice, prepare stagging this all in different ways, really. Besides, so, any questions? Any? If not, and I'm going to skip this question because I really want to give Ashok, I want to give Vivek enough time. But look at this question. If you have any suggestions, please do not hesitate to shoot me an email and then we'll look at it.
This session is about the review of use of access on the tagged primary financial statements by the FPIs. At June ITCG meeting last year, we apprised the members that some companies were using extension access in the primary financial statements, and we were planning to do an in-depth analysis of the use of access. So today we will discuss our findings from the detailed review and our staff proposals. So as a background of our research, we think the XBRL calculations are important because they can be used to validate XBRL filings and allow users to see how line items roll up to totals and subtotals. To support the calculations in XBRL filings, we add equivalent line items in the taxonomy when the reported line item can be used through the use of an access. Slide 3 provides an overview of our research. Initially, we started our review with the use of extension access only, but later on, we decided to review the use of taxonomy access also. because our policy is to create equivalent line items when tagging through access may not facilitate calculations. And our review highlighted that there is a diversity in tagging of entity-specific disclosures with some using access and some creating extension line items. So here we grouped the use of access in different categories to better understand the reasoning and the related staff proposals. Today, we'll discuss first four categories, and the fifth category, that is American Depository Receipts, will be discussed at a future ITCG meeting. We also noticed certain instances of incorrect tagging that are in Appendix A. So first category is supplementary currency. We observed that some FPIs displayed their primary financial statements in a currency that is a convenience translation of the amounts reported as per the IFRS standards. Here, companies commonly use one of these two approaches. That is, some companies use unit ref to indicate the currency, and few companies create currency extension access to tag the translated amounts. However, we think that none of the approach is suitable in this case, as an electronic user may not know the translated numbers represents a convenience translation, and user can be misled to think that the translated numbers are required by the IFRS standards. To analyze the issue further, we referred IAS 21, which deals with the effect of changes in foreign currency rates, and noted that paragraph 57 of IAS 21 requires specific disclosure when an entity displays convenience translation in its financial statements. And we observed that the disclosure requirements of subparagraph B and C are reflected in the taxonomy, but there is no specific element to disclose. There is no such specific element to reflect the requirement of subparagraph A to clearly identify the translated numbers as supplementary information. Therefore, we propose to add this new general application access to capture the disclosure requirement of subparagraph A of paragraph 57 to clearly identify the translated amounts as supplementary information. Do you agree with this staff proposal?
Take it, you agree, if you don't hear anything to the contrary.
Do you agree? Just a question for you, Lewis. Is this something that you've come across in terms of the US GAAP position?
That doesn't seem to be that we've observed as a significant item.
No, I suspect it's more common for the foreign private issuers because they're more likely to have a functional currency that's different from US dollar, but
Yeah, I think you should check whether it's a voluntary disclosure. So I would assume it's voluntary, purely voluntary and not mandatory, because in the past it was chosen very often to convert it to US GAAP main disclosures, just to help support that it's easier transport what it means if you have euro as your main currency. So the question would be whether they have tagged it as an extension.
What?
They deal it, and the question is, and so if it's voluntary, we would not support to change something on the taxonomy on
I
that.
I think the issue is that it is a voluntary disclosure, but if you do give the disclosure, there are certain requirements around it, which is to make it very clear that this is a convenience translation rather than your amounts reported in your presentation or functional currency. Therefore, what we and what we've observed is that actually it's not always clear, exactly. And the proposal is an intention to try and add that clarity where it happens.
I mean, if that's the objective of that, then I think it would be very useful, because then it improves clarity, you know? if that's the objective. You know?
No, and we experienced a problem, Dirk, when we downloaded all the data in Excel spreadsheet for companies we had more than one currency, and we had no idea which is a convenience translation, which is the really IFRS. And the convenience translation, you can translate things to profit and loss account at year-end exchange rates and things like that. So it just, we thought it was very useful for investors to know exactly what they have reported in the paper financial statement, because in the paper financial statement, you really say to a user, look, I communicate to you that this is a convenience translation. The same kind of piece of information needs to also be communicated to an electronic user. And this is currently not the case.
And you should see it more frequently. I think, for example, 5 years comparison in the MD&A usually, I think, also has something like that, and some key, you know, the key disclosures in the MD&A. Okay.
Kyle.
So I've got 2 points to make. The first one is I do support the introduction of the axis, although I worry about whether it will be consistently applied. And to the extent that it's not consistently applied, introducing it further errors. My second point was really a question, which is in terms of how is the access going to be provided through the taxonomy. Another way of asking that question is, would you have to extend in order to make use of the access, or were you going to bind it to some of the existing elements?
I think this is a general for application access, so you don't have to extend for the access. Now, when you have such a disclosure in your statement of profit or loss account, you would have to build a table that includes this access. Correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So maybe slide 7 is answering this for me, but so I believe it feels to me like this is as much a presentation issue as anything, because you don't need. What you're trying to do with the creation of this axis is it just a presentation issue, or are you trying to provide separate context for these facts that are under different currencies? Because I don't believe you actually need that, because the different currency actually provides a different context. It might be ugly, but theory it works, but presentationally, slide 7 would suggest that there's some confusion if you do it that way. Is that?
I think there are 2 requirements here, in fact, for electronic user. You have to know which currency the value is presented in, yeah, or disclosed in, which is the unit reference. But also you need to know if for a particular company, that company has 2 values with 2 different currencies. So if I have revenue with both, like, for instance, US dollars and euro, I need to know which one is the really IFRS.
Yeah, what's your default, right, if you will?
Yeah, that's the default, and which one is the supplementary currency. So you cannot resolve only by knowing which is the unit reference currency. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think so.
Peter.
I was wondering whether there was any interaction with
MPMs as well, in that if these are measures of profitability translated into whatever currency management believes is useful, and there may not be a defined fashion in which that translation actually happens, could there be some interaction between, well, actually, these convenience columns are now actually regarded as MPMs, and do we need to think about how the tagging from an MPM standpoint interacts with tagging for this purpose as well, maybe?
Not something we've actually thought about, but I think that's a very good point as to anything that is a subtotal could potentially be viewed as a management performance measure if it was used in external communications. But yeah, I think that's something we need to think about a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Donna.
Yeah, just kind of a question from a user perspective. So by putting a dimension on these values, they really are report-wide values for that currency. Does that create some question in pulling the data? And could that information be communicated by separate elements? So you would have an element that communicates your functional currency, an element that says, if you've provided supplementary information, what's that currency? So that the unit ref is telling you what the currency is that links that to that element, so you're not tagging every single value with that member, mm-hmm. which is, again, another burden on preparers as well, is now I have to tag all of those with this dimension of member, as opposed to one element that gives me that information.
It's an alternative. I'm looking really for the use probably more easier to do, either to say, okay, I use unit reference and other line items, and I build the link myself, what is the supplementary currency, or you really say for each of the values that have been tagged, you already see immediately by using this axis, what is the supplementary currency based on the tools we have seen before. The solution we're proposing here is the easy, but this is something definitely when we do a proposed taxonomy update, we could ask for more feedback on.
Can I ask you a little bit the technical questions? If you want to use this member, in that case, is the both items share the item, I mean line items. And line items member can be selected as you might remember, the unit or some levels. So that if the company want to disclose the British pound and the US dollars, in that case, is if the both use are both one line items, they have to share the same unit and also that the same something and other functions too. So usually, I'm just guessing that, for example, the Japanese yen is so much different from the other the currencies. So in that case, is technically we can't share the one line items like I thought that. So that in that case, we need to add another line items. Just my question. I'm wondering. I can't remember that so much. This is because these days I really want the worry about that we shared a lot of line items using dimensions, but in that case, is the line item originally have some functions. For example, unit or there's some monetary or not. So that in that case, is sometimes if it's those different currencies can't share, might be not able to share the one line item. Does this happen? Is that happened?
I'm not sure.
Maybe John knows more than
that. I'd like to see an example talking about Qi. I'm not sure I'm understanding.
Example that the one line item needed to share there's some unit or the how much the. I can't remember the name also, the more technical part. So maybe it's better to check.
I think maybe to give an example send it to John and Vivek, and then maybe we can look at it, because I think we need to visualize the problem here.
I can remember.
Let's move on. Vivek, you've got quite a few more questions for the group.
So second category is preference shares. During our review, we observed that companies commonly presented a disaggregation of issued capital into ordinary capital and preference capital in the statement of financial position and the statement of changes in equity. And we also noted the diversity in tagging of such disaggregation. This discussed two different approaches used for tagging preference shares in the statement of financial position. First one is use of an excess, that is classes of share capital. And second approach is use of extension line item. As it is a commonly reported disaggregation, and the use of an excess may not facilitate easy calculations, we propose to add equivalent common practice line items as children of existing IFRS taxonomy line item issued capital. These two line items will be added as an existing, as a children of existing line item. So do you agree with this proposal?
I agree. And philosophically, you know, simplicity is really the virtue of the whole thing. If you really start to do axes and memberships in a primary financial statement, that really doesn't really, in my mind, for the users, not really desirable. So simple approach, what you're proposing is perfect, I think, primary financial statement, rather than, you know, they're using extensions and membership and axes. And I think this is another kind of the philosophical thing, and I think probably regulators should probably, and I would really suggest, you know, the ISB should really contact all the regulators, that extension should be really avoided at least PFS stage. And here is a logic. If you're really presenting your financial statement, it's come from standard, right? IFRS standard, principle-based standard. So whatever you're presenting is not out of the standard. So why should you be extending any element within the PFS which you're presenting? There is no need for it. Pretty simple logic, isn't it? It's so logical thing.
Ashok, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think the problem there is that there is a lot of entity-specific disclosures, even in relation to the primary financial statements, and actually in a lot of cases those entity-specific disclosures are quite useful. So I think it would be very difficult to end up in a situation where you had no extensions in relation to the primary financial statements, simply because to predict every single sort of reporting practice that people are likely to want to use, we would end up with an enormous taxonomy.
Anyway, I agree. Good proposal.
Very briefly, I also agree with the proposal, and in fact, I very much agree with what Ashok says in terms of simplicity. It's unfortunate you don't like the anchoring, because the anchoring mechanism indeed tries to ensure that issuers, before creating an extension, look at the taxonomy to see where's the anchor. And it might well be that once finding the anchor, they realize that the meaning of that anchor is in fact so close to what they wanted to create as extension that in fact they will apply that anchor as a primary tag instead of creating an extension. So I think we're there with the same ambition. Let's see how this plays out in practice, as for now we only have very limited experience in the ESA field test. I think simplicity is key, and at least I would definitely agree with that.
Donna.
Yeah, I'm just going to comment that you may be seeing this in FDIs, because the SEC requires, the SX regulations require to separate common, what we call common or ordinary, from preference shares. So it's not really common in that jurisdiction. So that begs another question, is I don't know when others come on whether they have specific requirements as well. It's not really common. It is a disclosure requirement, and how is it contemplated to somehow provide references to those other regulator disclosure separately from IFRS?
I can't comment on past things, but what we discovered as well, if, for instance, that in the statement of cash flow, we have that disaggregation between ordinary and preference. And I think the fact that we never picked this one up is just by pure chance, because our sample composition, yes, if we, our sample composition of 50 companies included by chance just 10 companies, even if these 10 companies, 9 out of these 10 would have disclosed it, we would have never picked it up in our past common reporting practice review. And in fact, what we bring back in June, where we have some additional common practice elements, more of these elements fit in that particular kind of category.
Yeah, and just to echo what was just said, so the FPIs is not just IFRS, it's IFRS plus ACC, and I think this is very often underestimated. So we have hundreds of such examples, just one tiny small example, and so it's very logic that you see this, because it's simply more efficient, because otherwise you would need two reports. You would, as a company, you would have one report fulfilling purely IFRS and one report fulfilling IFRS plus SEC, and that is too cost intensive. That's why you see such deviation from the taxonomy, which are from the company perspective very much logic. It's the only way how you can cope up with inconsistent from a requirement perspective. That's the only way. Yeah. And therefore, just as a recommendation, SX, I think, just become more familiar with those specific rules. I mean, it's everything is public. The SX rules is really very important. There are many others, especially, and we have to deal with them every day. Yeah, so it's really it's not just the IFRS standard in that case. Yeah?
Move on, Vivek.
This slide discusses the different approaches used for tagging preference shares in the statement of changes in equity. So in this example, the company has issued preference shares during the year, and we observed that companies mainly used one of these two approaches to tag this highlighted amount of 200. First approach is use of two axes, components of equity and classes of share capital, and approach second is use of only one axis, classes of share capital. We think that under approach two, an electronic user may not know whether the tagged value represents only issued capital or also includes share premium amount. Therefore, we are proposing to add an existing IFRS taxonomy axis, classes of share capital axis, to the statement of changes in equity table. Further, we are proposing to add a guidance label to the existing element, issue of equity, to clarify it further and to help preparers understand the use of the axis. So do you agree with this proposal?
Well, perhaps in the interest of time, does anyone have any major concerns about this proposal?
Well, I don't want to characterize it as a major concern, only that we would, in the tagging approach three, we would actually be using the components of equity axes first and only use the classes of share capital axes if there's a further disaggregation on the prep. So if you've got A, B, right? So we stay with that primary axis and then only introduce the secondary axis if there's a further disaggregation.
I think where you're getting to, Louis, may I have to...
our statement of shareholder, what was that axis called? The
components of equity.
Components of equity axis. You know, if you've just got common stock preference and you don't have any further breakdown, then that one axis is going to address all of what you're talking about here. The components of share capital would only come into play if you've got a further disaggregation, which syntactically you're going to require, and then would be but it's, semantically it's useful as well, and you know, use it to further break out the common and the preferred.
I think here we only have in the components of equity, we don't break down issued capital between ordinary and preference. So in fact, this access clause of share capital is serving to do a disaggregation of issued capital, if I understand correctly.
In all cases, what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think some of that, for us, was driven because of the SX requirements that required that breakdown as a separate component of equity for us, where I know the standards, it's just issued capital. So
correct.
I think why we look at it, view it that way, is because of that.
Yeah. Because then we have an other axis, Lewis, to say classes of shares, which then is a disaggregation for ordinary shares or preference shares.
Third category, continued and discontinued operations. So while reviewing the use of axis in the statement of comprehensive income, we observed that companies commonly reported a disaggregation of these three line items on this slide into continuing operations and discontinued operations. This slide also provides some examples. We observed that such disaggregation is tagged using one of these two approaches, that is, use of taxonomy axis and use of extension line items. As these are commonly reported disaggregations, we propose to add these six new equivalent common practice line items as listed in the right side of the table as children to the existing taxonomy elements listed in the left side of the table. Do you agree with this proposed addition?
This is cake and eat proposal, right?
Yeah.
I understand why you're proposing it in this fashion, but it seems to me that there needs to be some accompanying explanation, and the fact that regulators that are using a dimensional approach should be using the dimensional approach. Those that are trying to avoid a dimensional approach, obviously going to be, and you don't want to mix them if you don't have to. Maybe I haven't thought about that hard enough, but...
We don't have two separate taxonomies for that, John. The only way we handle is to say, okay, in our guides we explain it very much, and then we have, in our formula, we have this equivalence.
Yeah.
I forgot now what this quote where you see this relationships, but we are in that position that we have to support different type of regulators with different types of
requirements. As long as the regulators that are implementing it understand that one of these approaches might not apply to them.
And when calculations come into place, we are in a different ballgame.
We're in a different place again.
Okay. Moving on. So, last category, attribution to a specific named party and disaggregation. We observed some companies present line items that are attributed to a specific named party. Example, line item dividend received from subsidiary ABC Limited in the statement of cash flows. Also, we observed that some companies present a disaggregation of some line items in the primary financial statements. For example, breakdown of provisions into provisions of off-balance sheet risk and other provisions in the statement of financial position. Our review highlighted that such disclosures are tagged using one of these two approaches, that is, use of relevant line item with an axis or use of an extension line item. So here we are not proposing any improvement to the IFRS taxonomy because we do not find sufficient commonality in the disclosures, and we think providing guidance to ensure consistent tagging here is more related to the filing rules. So do you agree with this proposed cell?
Yes.
There is the summary of proposals that you just agreed.
Vivek, I'm just going to ask Bin Laden, did you have any comments on what we've been talking about?
No, I do not have comments at the moment. Some of the proposals we need to think further. Probably we will email the team if that's okay for you.
Yes, that's okay for us. Thank you. Okay, so summary of the proposals. Any last comments?
One last time. I think between the CON and DISCOP, we looked at that as the standard elements are really CONOP elements because the elements are to split DISCOPs when you have a DISCOPs. So otherwise, they're CONOP so that you wouldn't really disaggregate. So cash or PP&E, you wouldn't disaggregate between CON and DISC using that standard line item because that really represents CON ops.
Okay. Great. Right.
I had a question on the last topic. If I'm fully getting this, I know you guys are short on time. Some of these are kind of deep, meaty issues, though. And this one dealing with, this is someone, slide 26. So some companies present line items that are attributed to a specific name, subsidiary, associate, segment, related party, et cetera. What I'm not clear on there, if we're talking about
another entity, so say a related party or just some other entity that the business has a relationship with. Is there a suggestion here that you could use one of the primary line items for the reporting entity and just dimensionally qualify it to identify that other entity?
So this is the example that I give.
So it's still the reporting entity's value?
Yeah.
So, because I think you're thinking it's somebody else's value, but it's not somebody else's value, it's the reporting entity's value.
That's where it's come from.
So, you know, again, it's, I think, right, it's up to the regulator. I mean, you could tag it twice, you could do an extensible list, but it's depending on what's available. And
yeah, I think we can't, like Finn says, on the ESMA requirements, put an extension line item and anchor it. On the other requirements, you can have an access if you don't have to provide calculations. We can't do anything more here. We just say, look, you know, in practice, we have seen diversity, so it would be good to have some kind of room.
Right. So we would say, you, if you're not disaggregating, use an extensible list because we have that mechanism available. But we've also looked at maybe tagging twice.
Mm-hmm.
Tag it in the default and tag it with the member gives you both.
Yeah.
But
well, in these examples, the reported value is belongs to the reporting entity. It's not a value that it's not a value or a fact that belongs to another.
Correct.
Okay. All right. We will break now for lunch. I'd like to start again at 1:30. Lunch is won't break for lunch.
Just a very, very quick question. Shall we consider, whenever we are talking about such disclosures as entity-related disclosures, shall we consider it, entity identifiers as uniquely identifying those parties that we are bringing into disclosure, such as legal entity identifiers or the EDI, the global one, or the national ones, that would uniquely say which of the subsidiaries are we talking about? We can leave it for lunch, for thinking.
Again, a question in the past. We did that also with like credit ratings. We are saying, okay, within a taxonomy, we could have an access related party, name of a related party or whatever, identify for a related party because the disclosure requirements do it. Now, an entity or security-specific taxonomy with some identifiers can complement that to the IFRS taxonomy. We would not include that within the IFRS taxonomy because it's not our... we are not the standard setter for this type of identifiers. So, in fact, you could set an IFRS taxonomy where you have this access-related party. You can have an LAI taxonomy, and a regulator could use this in conjunction so that in tagging, a company can use the IFRS taxonomy access with a member coming from this LAI taxonomy.
I think it's just more a question of a placeholder for such an identifier. Not a specific one, but more like whether we foresee a placeholder to identify by something that is more unique than a name.
And we do that in place in taxonomy. Name of related parties, or we have an access credit scoring, credit classification. So we have some placeholders, but we do not go in that. Same, we have a placeholder for currency codes, but we do not specify the currency codes. It's that kind of philosophy we have applied.
Thank you.
All right, lunch time. Let's start again at 1:30. Lunch is at the end of the corridor in the kitchen.